Welcome to WWF's global press briefing outlining expectations for COP23. My name is John and I'll be your operator for today's call. Now all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later we will conduct a question and answer session. During the question and answer session, if you do have a question, press star then one on your touch-tone phone. Please note the conference is being recorded. And now I'll turn the call over to Mandy Woods with WWF's Global Climate Practice. Mandy, please begin.
Thank you very much, John, and good afternoon, good morning, and good evening, everyone, from wherever you're dialing in. Thanks very much for joining us. We really do appreciate it. Today, we've got a couple of our experts on hand, just to give you a bit of an overview of what we're expecting at COP23, which starts on Monday next week in Bonn. Let me just ask the speakers to introduce themselves. Let me introduce them for you. There's Manuel Pagal Vidal. There's Alfred Ralifo, and there's Lou Leonard. Manuel is the leader of the climate program in WWF, the Global Climate Work. Lou is the head of the climate program in the US, and Alfred is the policy manager for WWF Pacific, which includes Fiji. So, Manuel, can I turn it over to you to start us off setting the scene for us? Thank you.
Yeah, sure, Mandy. Thank you very much. Hello to you all. I am Manuel Pulgar Vidal, Climate and Energy Global Practice Leader of WWF. So let me start raising a very important statement. The COP23, organized by Fiji under the presidency of Fiji, is going to be the real first COP in which we are going to start to implement the Paris Agreement. So that is why the importance of this COP23, because it is about implementation. And to understand this statement, what we should do it is to understand what the Paris Agreement has left to us. The Paris Agreement, fortunately, it is a strong agreement that not only identify a clear threshold, 2 degrees and a double effort to get the 1.5, two main objectives, decarbonization and resilience, but also clear ways to make the NDCs, the National Determined Contribution, more enforceable gradually. So that is why this COP23 is important, because we are going to work to move the NDCs to being more enforceable in a gradual way. And it is important that we are working on implementation, mostly because we are in a very complex political context. This is going to be the first COP after the inauguration of the U.S. president, U.S. administration. This is a COP in which is going to be the first COP of new leaders of the world, in which President Macron of France, it has shown to be a real leader that it is moving the agenda forward. It is the first COP in which new authorities of the UN system are going to have their inauguration as part of a COP. So that is why also it is important. So what are the expectations of this COP? Sure, if we are talking about implementation, there are three main objectives on this COP. The first one, it is related to how much progress we have gotten in relation to the pre-2020 action. So the pre-2020 ambition, it is continuously an important issue to close the gap. And we do know that still we do need to double our effort to close the gap. And in relation to this pre-2020 action, it is important the assessment of the technical examination process, the work and financial technology mechanism, but also, and this is really important, that we are going to work the pre-2020 ambition action based on the Marrakesh Partnership for Global Climate Action. So the idea of having the pre-2020, including what the non-state actors are working on. The second main objective for this COP23, it is to define a clear design for the facilitative dialogue, that it is the former name of what now it is called the Talanoa Dialogue. Talanoa Dialogue, it is a Fijian phrase that means that we can convene together based in confidence to get some results, some strong outcomes, in this case to implement the Paris Agreement. So the idea of this dialogue, it is really important, because it is a dialogue in which we are going to stock off progress against the agreement, in which we are going to explore new opportunities for climate action, and we are going to move and create more ambitions to move the NDCs toward 2020. And the idea of this design, it is that hopefully we can have, as a result of a COP23, a clear design that can make us able, the world, the planet, to start the dialogue early in 2018, so that based on that, we can build this dialogue also based on the Marrakesh platform and the technical examination process on the IPCC 2018 report, among some others. And the idea also of this Talanoa dialogue, and we hope and we expect, it is that can cover all emissions, not only related to NDCs, but also related to some other climate forces, as for example, aviation and shipping and HFCs. And the third strong outcome that we are expecting to have, that and we are sure that we can get it, it is what it is related to the guidelines for the implementation of the Paris Agreement. And the idea it is to get in this COP23 a first negotiating draft, because we do need to have that as a way to move it toward Poland COP24, to have it in that COP being approved as a way to have, based on transparency, report, and MRB mechanism, ways to enhance the ambition of the NDCs of every country. Everybody knows that the INDCs that the world had put on the table in 2014 were good, but not enough to close the gap and to get the 1.5. So that is why we do need to have the Talanoa dialogue and the guidelines for the implementation of the Paris Agreement and the pre-2020 ambition action as a way to close that gap. Fortunately, the Fijian presidency has also identified some other key elements in this for this COP. One, it is to define an ocean pathway to connect the oceans debate not only from the COP, but from the COP to the Ocean Conference of 2018. For Fiji, the ocean, it is a key element in which Alfred is going to refer later. But also, they are working in trying to develop a five-year work plan for the loss and damage and a platform for the indigenous people. So that are the expectations of the COP, pre-2020, Talanoa dialogue, and also the guidelines for the implementation of the Paris Agreement, plus what the world is discussing on oceans, indigenous peoples, and also the loss and damage. Let me add that for us it is really important the non-state actors action agenda or the non-party stakeholders action agenda. I think that when we took this decision in Lima COP20 in 2014, it has been one of the most important decisions on the climate debate, because the non-state actors have shown not only that they are mobilizing climate action, but they are enough responsible to help the world to close the gap. Unfortunately, there are good trends in relation to renewable and clean energies and energy efficiency. Things are happening in relation to sustainable transport. Things are happening in relation to cities. We do need to strengthen our effort to restore lands and to avoid deforestation. But fortunately, the non-state actors, it is a very active initiative of the non-party stakeholders to contribute to close the gap and to keep the promise of Paris. Let me finish by saying that also in relation to the action agenda, the UN system, working with the civil society and the business sector, is working in strengthening the NASCA portal. The NASCA portal that was launched in 2014 included all the report that the non-state actors are sending to the UN system and to the portal to show how much they are mobilizing action. But it is clear that we do need to create a more strong template to be clear that we can track and we can follow up what the business sector and some other non-state actors are doing in relation to the climate action. So that is why in this COP we are going to start to discuss how can we improve the NASCA portal. And let me finish by saying that WWF is organizing for this COP23 what it is called the Panda Hub. The Panda Hub, it is a big effort of WWF to convene different actors from the public and private sector to promote an open and sincere dialogue, to develop new ideas and new initiatives, to contribute to close the gap and to keep the promise of Paris. We are going to have the Panda Hub at the Bone Zone at COP23. It is going to run from the opening in November the 6th until the Thursday, November the 16th. We are going to have more than 50 events with different actors from different countries, and we are sure WWF is going to contribute with the Panda Hub to be an active actor to help the planet to get what we had offered through the Paris Agreement. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Manuel. That was great. Alfred, can I hand over to you now and just introduce yourself as you start? Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Alfred Ralifo, and I work for WWF Pacific based here in Fiji, and I'm also responsible for all the policy work that we do, including policy work under the UNFCCC process. So in terms of Fiji as the COP23 presidency, this COP23 presidency provides Fiji with a great opportunity to facilitate and focus attention on the unique needs of all vulnerable small island developing states. So Fiji's presidency can leave a legacy by ensuring success and progress in certain agenda items in the formal negotiations that have the potential for substantive positive outcomes at COP23, and two of which are the adoption of the first gender action plan that was developed based on recommendations coming out of a workshop that was held in Bonn in May this year. There is mounting evidence that climate change actually affects women adversely to a stronger degree, especially at the grassroots level. The crucial role women play in addressing poverty, food security, health, education, energy, community resilience, and decision-making for their families and communities is especially under-recognized and should not continue to be overlooked. So this gender action plan is a great opportunity to empower women and elevate the important role that they play in accelerating climate action at all levels of society. And another important outcome is the adoption of the local communities and indigenous peoples platform based on the outcomes of the substantive multi-stakeholder dialogue that was held in Bonn also earlier this year in May. The indigenous people and local communities at the front lines of climate change will soon be able to exchange lessons and share their unique perspectives on reducing emissions, adapting, and building resilience through this new platform created by the Paris Agreement. So this platform will break fresh grounds at COP23 by giving indigenous peoples and local communities an active role in using their traditional knowledge and practices in shaping and accelerating climate action too. But for tonight, Fiji time, most importantly, I want to focus on the importance of oceans in addressing climate change. Fiji's presidency is a voice for the most vulnerable nations, such as the Pacific small island countries that are large ocean states, but are literally on the nexus of the ocean and climate change. So the ocean is the most critical of all natural ecosystems for our climate due to a combination of its composition and scale. The ocean regulates our global climate, and healthy oceans are critical for sustainable development, economic security, food security, cultural and social well-being of small island developing states. A recent report by the Secretariat of the Pacific Community in 2011 stated that the Pacific Island states, including Fiji, will need 60% more fish to feed its growing population by the year 2013. At the moment, our coral reefs are currently producing at its maximum and cannot produce 60% more fish by 2013. So unsustainable development coupled by climate change impacts will severely impact the security and sustainability of our people. So therefore, there is definitely no solution to global climate change without action on the world's ocean. That's why the Fijian presidency is looking to embed oceans as part of the UNFCCC process, and we call this the Ocean Pathway, which means we want to see oceans become an official part of the negotiations by 2020. So the Oceans Pathway Partnership is an opportunity to introduce a COP23 Fiji presidency-led initiative that will gradually integrate the themes of oceans into the formal negotiations by 2020. There are multiple activities and partnerships in the action space of the UNFCCC, which is related to the ocean. Many are part of several alliances and coalitions that have been set up in the last 5 years for a more comprehensive approach to insert oceans in the UNFCCC process. The Ocean Pathway will connect with the following broader initiatives to ensure that there is cohesion and effectiveness. Flagging the Ocean Pathway for 2019 and have the Ocean Workstream fully integrated into the UNFCCC by 2020 gives notice and allows for 2 years of advocacy and time to determine effective engagement in the formal negotiation process. And at the same time, it also allows consideration of inclusion through the existing agenda items and processes. The Ocean Pathway Partnership will also recognize the 2007 UN Oceans Conference Call for Action that was held in June and synergies with other related international processes on oceans, such as the Convention on Biological Diversity, the Ramsar Convention, and other the United Nations Conventions on the Law of the Sea and other international processes related to oceans too. So the Oceans Pathway Partnership is critical for the Fiji's presidency, and it will also enable existing financial mechanisms of the UNFCCC to ensure that climate change funding can support the adaptation work needed for healthy oceans. And at the same time, it will try to insert ensure the insertion of the ocean into countries' national targets called the NDCs, amongst other things. I think for Fiji, being a large ocean state and together with other small island developing states in the Pacific, the ocean is very, very, very critical to our very, very own existence and security. And it is something that we would like to see taken through till 2020 and beyond. Thank you very much.
That is great. Lou, can I hand over to you, and if you would mind just introducing yourself as you begin? Thank you.
Thank you, Mandy, and hello, everyone, wherever you're calling in from today. Thanks for being with us. My name is Lou Leonard, and I'm Senior Vice President for Climate and Energy at WWF in the United States. The United States government, as we head into these talks, the U.S. government has lost its moral authority and negotiation capital in these UN climate talks by announcing its intent to withdraw from the Paris Agreement in June. There are reports that the U.S. federal government plans to send a respected career diplomat to lead the U.S. Talks at COP23. This is a good sign, and hopefully it will allow the career experts within the U.S. State Department to do their work and participate where needed to keep the negotiations productive and ambitious. And at that nitty-gritty level of the technical negotiations, other governments are likely to continue to work fine with their U.S. counterparts, who they have been working with for years. But at this political level of the talks, the U.S. just has no credibility given the president's announcement regarding the Paris Agreement. So with that in mind, with the U.S. government stepping back, it will be important for other governments and for other U.S. leaders to step forward and provide more more ambition and more leadership in the talks. And this is actually how the Paris Agreement was designed to work. The Paris Agreement was designed with an approach of distributed leadership. It did not rely on one country or one set of actors to drive implementation and to keep momentum going within the talks. It was specifically designed to allow different countries to move forward, countries like Fiji and others to move forward into leadership positions when other countries were stepping back for one reason or another. It also, as Manuel mentioned, the Paris Agreement also was designed to allow leaders other than national government politicians, leaders within the private sector, within subnational governments like mayors and others, to move into leadership positions. And that form of the Paris Agreement is being really tested right now, and there's an opportunity to show that this distributed leadership can work. When we look at the other leaders that we would hope to see more ambition from, given where the United States has moved out of a leadership position, we're looking at the European Union, China, and Canada, in addition to Fiji, who you've already heard about. The European Union has been stepping up its diplomacy on climate change, and of course, for many years has been demonstrating through domestic policies that it takes the issue seriously. But with the U.S. stepping away, it's going to be more important for the EU, which of course is one of the historical largest emitters and largest polluters contributing to the climate crisis. It will be important for them to step forward and bring other countries with them. The European Union has a complicated process for developing its own positions and targets, but there was a good sign this year that the EU requested climate and energy plans from all of its countries in 2018, and this can be really a constructive foundation for the EU to move into the facilitative dialogue, which will happen at COP24. Also, leadership from individual member states, as we've seen from France, is really important to put pressure within the EU system to ensure the EU moves forward in a positive way. With respect to China, it's really hard to overestimate China's importance in these talks and in climate change more broadly, with the United States stepping back. We expect China to be very active at COP23 and influential in negotiating the rules and implementation guidelines, as Manuel described, and it will be important that China act with a broad sense of ambition and progress to make the Paris implementation guidelines as strong as possible. China's continued progress on the implementation of its commitments, of its nationally determined contribution and other policies, is an important signal to the rest of the world, including making additional progress on their emissions trading system that will help implement those commitments. And then lastly, I wanted to say a few words about Canada. The Trudeau administration, during its time in office, has taken significant steps to pivot Canada from what had been really a laggard position within the negotiations and on climate more broadly into a positive force. And it's important that they continue to move in that direction. The recent announcement by Canada and the United Kingdom to create a global alliance to phase out coal-fired power electricity is an important example of the way individual countries can try to bring other countries forward into leadership positions. So it will be important to see if other nations join that alliance in Bonn and to ensure that Canada continues to negotiate hard for strong implementation rules in the negotiations themselves. And if you look at the three countries together, or the three country and country blocks, the European Union, China, and Canada, they together can really build on this individual leadership to move the process forward. The three countries met at a ministerial meeting on climate action earlier this year, and it's important that they continue to set the pace and move forward towards 2018, when it will be important that this facilitative dialogue be successful, and those countries need to signal that they're strongly in favor of a robust process. So, in addition to other countries, it's important to see other leaders within the United States stepping up, given the president's decision on the Paris Agreement. And this is actually one of the really important functions played by the annual climate talks. That's to allow governments to hear from each other on progress they're making domestically to cut carbon pollution and ramp up renewable energy. For the first time, the U.S. government is unlikely to create a space at these talks to tell America's story on climate action. So this is a huge gap that could raise questions with other governments about whether What they read in the news from Washington represents what's happening in the real American economy. So luckily this year, even though the U.S. government is not going to create a Center for Climate Action, they will not be the primary voice for real news about climate action in Bonn. Instead, that information and that those stories and that confidence will be delivered to world leaders by other American leaders, ones that are truly representative of what's happening in the United States on climate and energy. There are now over 2,500 new climate champions that have banded together under a movement called We Are Still In, which is the largest U.S. coalition ever assembled to support climate action. And under that We Are Still In banner and other important initiatives like the U.S. Climate Alliance, U.S. businesses, cities, U.S. states will be attending COP23 in a unified delegation and working together to accelerate climate action back home. As the form that this delegation will take in communicating to the rest of the world in Bonn will be something called the U.S. Climate Action Center. And in this way, these subnational American leaders are going to pick up the torch and the responsibility that would normally fall to the federal government, and they will organize and hold a pavilion that's adjacent to the Bula zone of the negotiations and tell their stories and show the world that the U.S. can still be counted on as a trusted partner to reduce emissions and hopefully give other nations confidence to continue to do the same at home. So the last thing that I wanted to mention is a little bit about an important announcement that will happen at the COP related to the United States, and that is the release of the first phase of an analysis on the impact of emissions reduction commitments from the We Are Still In signatories and other U.S. subnational actors on the ability of the United States to meet its Paris commitments regardless of what happens in Washington. This analytical effort is called America's Pledge, and that first report will be released during the negotiations at the U.S. Climate Action Center Pavilion. Like the UN emissions gap report that is being released today, the America's Pledge report will help to provide a stock take of where we are now in the United States in terms of climate action and how much work needs to be done as we go forward. As drivers of the economy in the United States and around the world, businesses, cities, and other subnational governments have a crucial role in accelerating our transformation towards renewable energy and zeroing out fossil fuels. And it will be powerful to have those leaders from the United States there to speak for themselves at the talks. These analytical efforts like the America's Pledge and, of course, the UN UNEP gap report need to be taken into account in the facilitative dialogue process that will be designed and launched at COP23, and hopefully analytical efforts like this can motivate governments to accelerate their implementation and commit to setting new, stronger NDCs by 2020, which really is the strongest signal that any government can send, the EU, China, Canada, others, is to join with the 50 governments that have already said they plan to increase their ambition of their NDCs before 2020. So I'll end by just saying if you want more information on the U.S. Climate Action Center, you can visit www.wearestillin.com/COP23, and you can see more activities there about the pavilion and the this group of U.S. subnational leaders. So thanks very much. Mandy, back to you.
Thank you, Lou, and thanks to Elspeth and Manuel as well. I think you've given us a lot of food for thought. I'm sure that there might be some questions for you. So, John, can I hand back to you to manage the questions, please?
Thank you, Mandy. If you do have a question, press star then one on your touch-tone phone, which will unmute your line to ask a question. If you wish to be removed from the queue, please press the pound sign or the hash key. If you're using a speakerphone, you may need to pick up the handset first before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, please press star then one on your touch-tone phone. And our first question is from Lucia Graves. Please go ahead.
Hi, this is Lucia Graves from Pacific Standard Magazine. I'm wondering if someone can speak to, is there supposed to be someone representative of the Trump administration's view on climate present at talks? And would you have any suggestions for if Scott Pruitt or someone with that sort of viewpoint were to make an appearance, how they might be constructively received, if that's even possible?
John, I think I can take this one. This is Lou Leonard again. Hi, Lucia. Good to hear from you. In terms of the folks who will be representing the United States, what the reports that I've read, and I don't have direct confirmation about this, but the reports that I've read are that a career U.S. diplomat, Thomas Shannon, will represent, will lead the delegation of the United States to COP23. So he's a career diplomat, and I think that will send an appropriate tone and hopefully ensure that the U.S. can do its technical work in the nitty-gritty of the negotiations without being involved in sort of high-level political issues at the COP, which is really not appropriate given the stance that they've taken on the Paris Agreement. I don't know about whether Administrator Pruitt will attend the COP, and it's hard for me to speculate on how he might be received by other governments. But I do think that what we've seen previously at the G20 and the G7 indicate that governments are. Other governments are not afraid to be very clear about their ongoing support for the Paris Agreement, and to move forward to aggressively implement it. And I'm hopeful that will continue at this COP, regardless of who might come from the United States government.
Thanks.
Once again, if you do have a question, press star then one on your touch tone phone. We do have another question, or a question from Megan Shinsky. Please go ahead.
Hi, Megan here. Given the latest science and reports, do you think we should still be talking about 1.5? Is that still achievable?
Hi, Megan. This is Manuel. Look, the next year we are going to have the IPCC report of 1.5. There are many people who are thinking that the report it is going to show how unfeasible it could be to get the 1.5. But it is not going to have that approach. What it is going to happen it is that report is going to show us how much else we should do to get the 1.5 promise. I think that the IPCC report, what it is happening with some other initiative of Mission 2020, among some others, it is that fortunately the world it is still keeping actions as a way to keep the promise of the 1.5. And I think that we should insist and we shouldn't give up on that threshold.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we have a question from Juan Ramirez. Please go ahead.
Hi there, Juan here. As an incoming COP presidency, what is the influence Poland is likely to have on discussions in Bonn, especially on those things that should be agreed on at COP24?
Manuel, do you want to take a first crack at that?
Yeah, okay. I think that to understand what it could be the next COP24 in Poland, it is important to understand first what is going to happen in the COP23. Unfortunately, the Fijian has developed this idea of the Talanoa dialogue, and they are also showing their will to lead the process since the beginning of the next year. So I hope and I think that is going to create a strong partnership in between the two countries. I think that the best way to move the process toward a strong COP24 in Poland, it is by having Fiji and Poland working together. That is my first comment. My second comment, it is that I think that the Polish have in front of them a huge opportunity. This is going to be their third COP. And remember that it was in Poland, COP19, in which they created this concept of the INDC. It was in COP19 in which all this red framework for the Warsaw framework for red and the Warsaw mechanism for loss and damage was created. So I think that the COP24, it could be for the Polish a good opportunity to consolidate what we had started some years ago. And the third, I think that it is important to recognize that even though the COP24 in Poland, it is not going to be organized by the EU. Poland, it is part of the EU. So I hope that with all the support of the EU, we can move the COP24 toward a big success, mostly in related to the facilitative dialogue and the guidelines for the implementation of the Paris Agreement. And I'm not sure, Lou, if you want to complement with some other comments about that.
Thank you, Manuel. The only thing that I would add to that very good set of points is how important it will be for Poland to be consistently showing leadership both in the UN process and within the EU's own process for developing a stronger NDC by 2020 and allowing joining the ambitious members of the EU bloc like France and others to push ambition domestically so that the EU can come to the talks with a really strong revised NDC. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Once again, if you do have a question, press star then one on your touch-tone phone. And we don't have any questions on the line at this time. Mandy, would any of our speakers like to offer closing remarks?
Thank you. Do you want to make a last comment before we wrap up?
I can hear you well, Mandy. I'm not sure if it is your phone.
I beg your pardon. Is this better?
Yeah, now it's better.
Okay. I was just saying, should we just get you to each give a last comment before we wrap up? And Manuel, can we start with you?
Yeah. Let me give a last comment saying that this climate debate and this climate negotiation has gotten a lot. And so we should focus mostly in this COP in the implementation measures, because the only way to keep the promise of Paris, it is by implementing all the clauses of this agreement. The agreement, it is a good one, but we do need to develop the complementary measures as a way to having fully implement it. And we do know that we should continue moving our actions based on the sense of urgency and the need to raise ambition. Because we need to close the gap, we need to keep the promise of the 1.5, we need to move our actions based on what fortunately have started to be the trend. So we should continue working in deploying renewable energies. Also, we should continue working in the entry into force and also implementation of the Kigali Amendment to promote energy efficiency. We need to continue pushing and working for universal access to energy. We need to continue encouraging the citizens to move it into the electric vehicles and to encouraging the government to change their tax and fiscal policies to promote the import of electric vehicles on their countries and their territories. We need to work strongly in land restoration because that is a key element. And when we talk about land, also we are talking about market, commodities, and food. So that is a topic with forest that we do need to address more strongly, the industries among some others. Things has already started to move. We should continue working and pushing for mobilizing action as a way to keep the promise of Paris. Thank you.
Thank you. Lou, do you want to make a quick comment?
Certainly. Thank you, Mandy, and thanks again to everyone for joining the call. this is the first meeting of the parties to the Paris Agreement since the inauguration of President Trump, and it's important that the parties understand that what's happening in Washington is not representative of what's happening in the rest of the U.S. economy on climate change. So at this COP, it will be important for those American leaders from around the United States, governors, mayors, corporate CEOs, to come to the talks and explain to other governments that they are still in the Paris Agreement, they're still in the fight against climate change, and that the American economy will continue to move forward towards meeting the commitments that the United States has set under the Paris Agreement. It will be equally important for these American climate leaders from around the United States to then go home and make new commitments and take new actions to back up the words that they'll bring to COP23. And with a global climate summit in California in the fall of 2018, this will be an important moment to really show up again and demonstrate to the world that the U.S. economy is still taking climate change very seriously. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Lou. And Alfred, can you have the last word for us?
Thank you, Mandy and everyone else, and for Manuel and Lou for your very, very useful contributions. And I think from my end, I would like to conclude by saying that for the Fiji COP presidency, the Prime Minister's announcements at the closing of the pre-COP has strongly committed that Fiji will, as the presidency, will work very, very strongly with other governments and also with other non-state actors, the private sectors, the communities, as well as the civil society organizations and NGOs to try and work towards finding a very, very strong pathway to implement the Paris Agreement and also to close the gap. We are committed. He also strongly mentioned that 1.5 degrees is actually the upper limit for small island Pacific states and other vulnerable communities. And therefore, Fiji's presidency is also committed to ensure that our NDCs are reviewed and that are improved and have oceans integrated into the NDCs, and as well as ensuring that our other non-state actors are actually strongly contributing towards the implementation of the NDCs. And we are looking at ensuring that oceans have a is part of the formal process of of the UNFCCC by 2020. So I think for WWF Pacific and our partners and communities here in Fiji, we are strongly committed towards supporting the Fiji presidency vision, not just at the COP, but at the same time beyond the COP. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you to all of you and to those who've joined us on the call today. We appreciate your time, and we obviously will be in our various offices to take extra comments or questions as you prepare your stories and, of course, through and during the COP. So thank you, John. Can I hand back to you?
Yes. Thank you, Mandy. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's conference. A recording of this call can be made available on request. Thank you for your participating, and you may now disconnect.